And I think what we learned along the way was the timelines of a startup and the timelines of a strategic are not always the same. There's some great partners. We made a lot of great friends that we still interact with and talk to pretty frequently. But it's just the timeline wasn't the same. And we didn't want the Internet of Things to becoming the Internet of the Body to pass us by. And that meant being in control of our own destiny.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Dave Kuragundlam, co-founder and CEO of Alio. Alio is a remote monitoring platform for managing chronic conditions. David attended West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine on a health profession scholarship from the United States Air Force. He was preparing to begin a surgical residency when he was confronted with the need for the Alio remote monitoring platform. In this episode, David explains Alio's mission to take the Internet of Things and transform it into the Internet of the Body. We also discuss the importance of finding investors whose goals and incentives are aligned with those of the company. Here's our conversation. Welcome, David. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hi, Christine. Thank you for inviting us. It's certainly an honor to be here.
It's good to see you, and it's been great to know you. We've known each other now for more than 5 years. You're one of the first Rosenman innovators, and it's been so exciting to see how, you know, just to see all your hard work and your journeys. And I think when we first met, Alio was GraphWorks.
It was.
And so there's a lot of changes, and there's a lot of good thing come up from your work. So maybe we can start by sharing with our listeners about your background, like why you started GraphWorks and that become Alio.
Happy to share. So it certainly is an honor to be here. And thanks again for starting the Rosenman Institute here, and being an innovator certainly got us moving on the path to where Alio is today. And so thank you again for allowing that to happen and breathing it into existence, if you will. It's really exciting. It's been a tremendous journey for us and a great network to be a part of. So for my background and path to entrepreneurship, really came from a research background where I'd done a lot of work at the National Institutes of Health and some other areas focusing on research, and but wanted to spend more time with people, and had an opportunity to do that through medical school. Wanted to become a vascular surgeon, was headed off to a surgical residency, and started to see a very interesting phenomenon of that disintermediation between patients and clinicians. There's a tremendous amount of innovation in terms of the products that we could use to treat the disease for patients in the vascular field, but kind of once they left your cath lab or the OR, you're effectively waving goodbye, and you'd wait for the patient to come back. And that underlying disease process hasn't necessarily been reversed, and the symptoms could come back. And how do you effectively solve a sampling error problem, which is I need to know when to treat the patients and what to do. So that was the underlying thesis. Realized that there might be an interesting opportunity to tackle that with sensors and software. And that's how the Alio journey was born.
Yeah, I think that was when you first started the idea, the Internet of Things. That was still like the beginning.
Indeed. Yeah, we really wanted to take the Internet of Things and make the Internet of the Body, and we're certainly still on that journey. We've made a couple pivots along the way to accelerate our time to market and our journey, but it's been very exciting at each step of the way.
So can you tell us about the pivot that you make along the way, and what are those pivots, and why you make that pivot?
Sure. So when we started, as I mentioned from that background, I teamed up with a couple of my co-founders. They were on the back of a previous exit in the wound care space. They That was an exit into Johnson & Johnson Advanced Wound Care, and that allowed us to self-fund the company through their hard work for the first couple years. And the initial idea was, can you make sensors small enough to effectively spray paint them onto cardiovascular implants? And so we showcased that that was possible, did the patent work, did the initial animal work, which the Roseman Award allowed us to do, which was exciting. So that made that took a benchtop into animal work a reality. Was through winning the Roseman Award, I think it was 2015, and enabled us to showcase that was possible. We realized that obviously there were a lot of great folks that could make cardiovascular implants and had so much experience. And I think we very much looked at it as an Intel Inside model of, for the next generation of cardiovascular implants that could be quote unquote smart, we wanted to be the underlying chip, if you will, to enable that to happen. And so we, with the animal data in hand and the fact that it could work, we went out and hit the road asking if there were folks that wanted to be partners. And I think what we learned along the way was the timelines of a startup and the timelines of a strategic are not always the same. There's some great partners. We made a lot of great friends that we still interact with and talk to pretty frequently. But it's just the timeline wasn't the same. And we didn't want the Internet of Things and becoming the Internet of the Body to pass us by. And that meant being in control of our own destiny. And so that was a tough decision to make. It was made in late 2016 with not a lot of cash in the bank, but we went to our team and we went to our investors and we said, we want to be in control of our own destiny. There's a very clear and present patient population that we can start with that needs this technology, and we believe that this can be done non-invasively with a wearable rather than by putting our sensors onto somebody else's cardiovascular implant. And that allowed us to control our own destiny and was kind of the key pivot of the company, if you will, and bring the product to market faster.
Can you explain to us about what do you mean by control your own destiny by changing the product, the technology from implantable to something that is a wearable?
Sure. So the underlying thesis was early warning of a catastrophic event. So trying to prevent patients from having to showing up in an ER with an existing problem that now required some sort of surgical intervention, an ICU stay, et cetera, as opposed to early warning where you can bring them into an outpatient facility and you can treat that with maybe a minimally invasive procedure or with, you know, titrating their drugs appropriately, et cetera. In our case, if we were going to put a sensor onto somebody else's stent, it was going to enable the clinician to know early when that stent was failing or when the disease process had kind of reared its ugly head all over again and early, and therefore you could treat it rather than waiting for the patient to show up in the ER with signs and symptoms that might maybe result in an amputation if we're talking about a peripheral stent or a heart attack if we're talking about a coronary one. But that meant working with somebody else's underlying implant platform. And so then being kind of tied to their R&D process, their time to market, their clinical team, their reg team, their quality team, et cetera. Whereas we made the decision that we had a very exciting platform. The algorithms that we had built out meant that we could really build on the ability to impact multiple disease states. Our investors were very long-term focused, and they said, build a platform, showcase value, do the right thing for patients. And that was what controlling our own destiny meant. So that meant controlling the end-to-end remote patient monitoring platform on our terms, rather than having to be beholden to somebody else's team to help get it to market.
So is that your own, your only pivot? I'm sure there's a few more there.
Sure. So I think it's always important, I think, to certainly spend a lot of time with your customers. When we made the pivot to the wearable, that's when the focus on the end-stage renal disease and dialysis space began. Originally, we were focused on one of the key, three key problems that these patients face. So about 40% are going to get hospitalized in any given year for heart failure, effectively since their kidneys aren't functioning as well as they should. They're on dialysis to help manage that fluid load. And that doesn't always happen the way that it should. And if you have too much fluid, the sequelae is heart failure. Likewise, the kidneys are very involved in electrolyte imbalances. high risk of having either high or low potassium, resulting in arrhythmias and potentially fatal sudden cardiac death, et cetera. But the one that we were initially only focused on was the vascular access issue. The vascular access is a lifeline for a dialysis patient. It's what allows them to get hooked up to their dialysis machine and receive that life-saving procedure. So it really is their lifeline. But once again, they have a very high rate of these accesses failing. So on average, one for one vascular access is going to be needed to be intervened every year. So knowing when that happens early is crucial because you can do a lower cost procedure, more minimally invasive, easier to utilize, rather than resulting in what sometimes can often happen, which is a total closure of that access, resulting in a new central line being placed, which has a high rate of sepsis while you wait for the new vascular access that you then have to create to mature. So we were only focused on vascular access. We showcased to the world that it could happen. Some of the top vascular access folks, they were very excited by it. But we realized that we had to be able to align. And one of the key features that we always talk about internally is aligning the four Ps: the patient, the physician, the provider, and the payer. And we realized that by only focusing on vascular access, we weren't aligning everybody. And so that meant about 8 months or so after we had initially made the pivot to the wearable, we did the early clinical work to showcase that it could be done. Talking to the customers again, they said, you've got one problem, but not all three. How can you impact that? So we effectively did a company-wide three-day hackathon, and we said, how do we do it? Added on a whole new sensor suite. And then I think once again, within a few months, we were able to get initial data that showcased we could track some of the key metrics that are involved in heart failure tracking. And then now through a partnership with the National Health Service in the UK into electrolyte tracking as well. So now we have the full spectrum of issues that the patient certainly faces, the physician has to deal with, and the provider and the payer are stuck tackling in terms of a high cost situations that can now become low cost outpatient situations that they can handle.
And throughout the process of, you know, changing direction, changing technology, you also have to bring your team along with that decision. How do you go about that they feel like, okay, here we go, we change again. You know, that can be frustrating, but you manage to bring your team to come together and do that.
I think a big part of that is culture. So I think we certainly stress that. I think we love the fact that people that are here and people, even folks that have left, always talk about what a family the Elio family is. And I think that's really important. I think actually just over the last 3 months, we celebrated five people who had 5-year anniversaries. So they've been here all along and they faced the, and we just asked them to face the roller coaster with us. Right. And I think we've been very open with them when times are tough. We've been open, you know, with them when times are good. I think we've been able to talk about what are our core values in terms of keeping those four Ps. I think has always doing the right thing for the patient, keeping the four Ps aligned has always been that core value. And so, that's kept people on board, kept them excited, and why people continue to want to work with the team here.
And in addition to the team, you also need to convince your board and your investor. And sure. You seem to have success in, you know, overcome all those challenges.
So for us, I think it was all about alignment very early on. In addition to kind of some of our initial friends and family that came alongside of us, it was also investors that had a very long-term mindset. So they were a lot of the original investors in a neurovascular business that was about 10 years to IPO and is now a very successful a business. They knew the journey. They understood the journey. They were willing to take the time that it took. They have aligned on that vision of there's a clear and present need, and you have a differentiated product in an emerging market that you have a chance to really take a hold of. And that was what kept them engaged with us along that way. And as if you're always going to, you know, tough times always, you know, kind of showcase different folks and how they're thinking about the world, and you learn some things. But at the same time, it was very valuable for us that the key folks really believed in the management team and the vision and stood by us and were willing to face that with us as well. And I think once again, that was a culture.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
Along the way, you also bring new investors to come as well. And how, you know, people always say, like, make sure you get the right investors. And how strict do you follow that?
I will say that we have become more, you know, I think it's more strict, right? So I will say certainly about that that foundational alignment. I think you learn some things early on when you're out there initially looking for capital, and now especially as we look at for the next round that we'll be looking at is really a growth round into the commercialization as we're making this turn from clinical into commercial, and then that commercialization round that we'll be looking to gain. It will be a different set of investors that probably have different expectations, but we certainly want alignment around vision. So what we've built and what the long term future is, keeping that there, I think, is certainly important, and not misaligning those incentives, I think, is really key, because then I think that's what leads to that strife, and then you're stuck managing strife rather than focusing on execution. And I think that's a good mantra to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. And so now with Elio, your organization, your team is growing, and you mentioned culture is so important. And how do you make sure that the new people embrace the culture that you have established?
Sure. So I think now that most folks, I think, on the team are vaccinated, et cetera, we actually just about a week or so ago had our kind of team retreat, and we were able to, we utilized a technique we call working backwards. There was actually a book that was just published a month or two ago as well, from a couple of Amazon execs that published that book, and certainly would highly recommend it. But it's a mantra that Samit, my co-founder, and I have always had, which is, let's work backwards from what we want to be. And so we did that, and we actually had all the new folks kind of talk about their experiences. So we did it TED Talk style, where they talked about an experience and we worked backwards from what does a company at scale look like. And we spent the first maybe 10 minutes in that TED Talk, and we spent the other balance of the hour talking about, well, how does that experience translate into what you would like to see from a Leo at that same stage? And then we worked all the way backwards to both my co-founder, Samit, and our COO, Ray, who's been with us for about 5 or 6 years, talking about situations where we face some of those pivots, what the core values were, and how we channel those, and how we want to keep those core values even as we move forward. So I think it was a really good blend of new folks being able to come in, talk about their experiences, talk about how, you know, that experience can impact a Leo and why they believe that's going to have a big impact on the future, along with also bringing in some of the folks that have been here for a while to talk about what the core values are. And I think we'll certainly see how that how that pans out. But I think it's certainly been one of the techniques that we've tried to bring in. So there's that good blend of, a breath of fresh air, if you will, in terms of new folks, but also that they know where the company's come from, the origin story, and the core values that have brought us to where we are today.
And the new people also bring new ideas.
Exactly, which is certainly very key.
Yeah, and so so you mentioned now that you try to bring the clinical state into the commercial state, and how far along is that before you reach that commercial state?
Sure. So we've been bringing on some of our early pilot customers that have been working alongside of us and showcasing value. So I mentioned that the NHS as a great partner. They were actually sending nurses sometimes 50 miles each way to get some of this data. We had a chance to kind of stick our hands up and say, we can actually help you do that in a remote monitoring situation. They said, that's great. What else can we help with? And that was how we brought our non-invasive potassium algorithm to bear, was with that partnership. And that's transitioning into a commercial opportunity as well. Likewise, with our partner here in the U.S. In Intermountain Healthcare, a great partner to have alongside of us. They certainly see the burden of the cost of care. And so being able to showcase that in an initially small pilot, larger pilot, and then commercial situation as we transition from that clinical to commercial phase later this year is certainly very exciting.
I was very pleased when you mentioned about, you know, your partnership with the NHS. And you know, most of the time, companies don't approach NHS as their first or their early partner. Can you share with us the challenges or, you know, how hard it is to get their engagement, and what are the key points that somehow sell you to them?
Sure. Well, the first thing is you got to figure out what part of the UK you're going to work in, because depending on what region of the UK you're in, the English can sound very different than what you're expecting. So that's certainly one one question to deal with. The regional dialects, if you will, are all fun. But that aside, it was an interesting partner for us, because dialysis, as it's covered here in the US versus the NHS, presented a very interesting problem. Here in the US, you have very different stakeholders and several different stakeholders that are playing at very different levels of the market, multiple clinicians as well. With the NHS, it all kind of came into one bucket. So in terms of value, we were able to talk about value and see what our potential value as a company was, kind of effectively at one line item, which was certainly very helpful in terms of showcasing value. And I think now, especially that there was a executive order that was put into effect about in 2019 called the Advancing American Kidney Health Initiative. And so there was the ability to now create a lot more of the value-based care models within kidney health. They're going to be in place January 1st of 2022. And so we were able to kind of do almost an apples to what would become apples, if you will, comparison. And so that's why we went to the NHS first. So it allowed us to run a lot of models, showcase what we could save in terms of cost, in terms of overhead, and in terms of personnel, et cetera, because they had all the data in one spot, and saved us from running around to multiple stakeholders that aren't always so willing to share that data with us, which was certainly one of the features of the NHS, and allowed us to push forward. So
how do you think that can translate from what you learned from the NHS to bring it here? I mean, you mentioned that you partner with Intermountain as well.
So especially as a lot of the a lot of dialysis will still be fee for service, but there is, like I said, a big push to bring people into the value-based models, whether they're IDNs, capitated, et cetera. So already having, you know, even you hear a lot about HNR outcomes and outcome studies, and often companies have to wait until they are commercial to then start doing that aspect. By already having a partnership with the NHS, where we have, you know, almost a year's worth of data with them already, through that partnership, we can already start to show outcomes data to new potential partners here in the US that are doing a paid pilot or whatever it might be with us, which is certainly very exciting. So by having a little bit of a historical data, and not having to wait until all your clearances are in hand, getting, you know, struggling to find that first customer, and then doing a large outcome study. By working with the NHS, we already had a little bit of what the value-based customers who are now presenting an ever larger portion of the pie are likely to see. And that was certainly very valuable for us. And I think was also just a proof point of a value-based customer sees value in what you're doing was just a great proof point for us to have in mind as we enter those conversations.
So for many of our listeners who are interested in embarking on this entrepreneurship journey, I want to give them a concrete example. How do you find somebody to talk to at NHS? It's such a huge organization. Knowing the right person and then knowing the right person who can make that decision is so hard. And how did you go about that?
So for us, it actually started off, I'm a, for, I, I may, lose some audience here, but I'm a big Liverpool football fan. So that was always very exciting. So English Premier League Saturday mornings is, and is kind of the one aspect of the week that my team knows they cannot get a hold of me on. That's kind of my time away. And interestingly enough, I actually just started talking to a bunch of NHS docs via Twitter about football. And so that actually entered how we got. So one of them was a GI doc. And I mentioned that we both support Liverpool. And so I asked, by the way, curious, do you know anyone who's interested in doing research, a nephrologist is interested in doing research with the NHS? We actually got pulled in to the NHS that way, started a relationship there, just kind of kept flying over there and developed the relationship. And so over a few beers in a pub sort of situation, you had a chance to get a chance to know more docs, talk about what we're doing, got introduced into the research segment, spent time designing the product there with their team. And then actually, they actually have a very interesting cohort. So they're called the Academic Health Science Network. So kind of similar to what QB3 is and the Rosenman Institute is here within UCSF in the Bay Area. They have something similar. So it's cohorts of hospitals have a what's called an Academic Health Science Network above them that are looking for interesting innovation opportunities to help fund and problems. So basically, they act as a bridge between clinicians seeing a problem and companies that could solve a problem. So an AHSN group in the northeast of England basically said, we have this problem, as I mentioned, of sending nurses 50 miles each way to get this data. Is there a company out there that could potentially tackle this problem? And because of the relationship that we had with some of the other NHS docs, they said, hey, you might very well fit this. Why don't you apply? Made the connection. We applied, got pulled in, have developed an amazing partnership. So the more direct way for the audience is go look up AHSN. There's a great set of websites that has interesting problems that they're looking to solve. I think it's called Digital X as well. So there's some accelerators within that are NHS funded, NHSX, and other great accelerator opportunities where you can apply even as a U.S. company and get involved in and just showcase your commitment to their patients and how you're going to help save the NHS money. And that certainly is a valuable story to have for them.
I think the advice seems to be like go root for Liverpool.
Exactly. I would highly suggest that everyone does that anyway. It's been a tough season, but the last couple have been really, really good. But I think that, you know, FaceTime, I think there's nothing beats pounding the pavement and FaceTime, I think, for any entrepreneur, right? And I think we had a chance to do that. We did it and it put us in a good spot and then took advantage of, and I think now you can take advantage of tech and take advantage of the opportunities that the NHS is talking about and just do the groundwork to get there.
So before we end our conversation, there's a lot of ups and downs as you go through doing the ALIO. What are your top three lesson learned that you would tell yourself, you know, 5 years ago that you did not know?
Sure. So I think in terms of things that are valuable along the way, finding a great life partner was certainly one of them. And then becoming a girl dad has been amazing. So we've got a 13-month-old, and I think that has been certainly very valuable in terms of the things that ground you and the things that remind you why you're doing what you're doing every day. I think certainly keeping patients and the value that you bring to patients first and foremost is great. But I think having that that anchor was certainly very valuable as well, too, in terms of home and being able to focus on what we're doing. I think as well, you know, there are always things you maybe can't talk about. But in terms of values, I think that those are really important. And I think in terms of lessons, I would say the things that you think are going to kill your company are things like not raising a round when you need to, losing out on a contract, having a competitor that beats you with a new feature. And I'd actually say the things that actually kill you are hiring the wrong VP or bringing on the wrong investor. I think those are the things that if you don't have those values aligned, you get into trouble. And I think the whipsaw of a wrong hire or a wrong investor is way worse than being blunt with your team and asking people to maybe stretch a little bit on salary or fight a little harder or figure out how to build a new feature. Those are all things that you can overcome. But the weight of not having alignment of values is actually a much bigger risk that's much harder to solve over that time frame. So those are, if I could give two, make time for things that aren't as hard as you'll work, make time for things that are outside of work that you value, and also make sure that your values are aligned both at home and at the workplace. And I think that leads to will eventually lead to success.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and your Liverpool
allegiance. Yes,
it's allegiance. So it's been a pleasure to know you. It's so nice to have you here on our podcast and sharing your journey with everybody in our community.
Well, thank you so much again, Christine. You've been an amazing support of Alio along our journey, and it's been great to be able to ask questions and have that support. So thank you so much again for what you've created and all the support along the way.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Kelly Muscat, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.